This month, we're going to be looking at psychology. We're going to talk about so many interesting aspects of psychology. And what I want to do is to kind of clear up the way we view psychological work, therapeutic work, and so on. And today we're starting off with a really powerful episode, which is great if you've never listened to me before. If that's the case, welcome. And I know my audience is growing every month. So that might be the case. What we're doing is starting today with an episode called What is Psychology? Now, this isn't an academic presentation about, you know, the history of psychology and, you know, looking at the definitions in a very technical way and looking at all the different schools in a very technical way. We're taking it very practical, very down to earth, not simplistic. We're going to be looking at some very fundamental questions. What does it really mean to do psychological work? What are we talking about when we say psychology? Why is it powerful? What are the right approaches? What are the wrong approaches? What are some traps? And this is just going to set up this entire month. And in fact, it's going to spill over into June. We're going to have 2 new episodes this month, and we're going to have 2 repost episodes because I'm going away on holiday. I won't be here to record. And then in June, we're going to continue with 4 final episodes. So if you're curious about that, if you're interested in learning a lot about psychology here, then please stick around in May and June with the Deep Psychology Podcast. I'm your host, Ross Edwards, and let's get started with what is psychology. It's just to remind you that I've got new long form episodes every Wednesday with snippets on Thursday, Sunday and Tuesday, all at 9 p.m. Central European time, 8 p.m. UK time, 3 p.m. Eastern time. Make sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and a quick mention that you can stay up to date with my latest episodes and projects via my newsletter. You'll find a link in the description to that. So I'm just going to get right into a definition, because that's the title of the podcast. We're asking for a definition. This is a simple but powerful definition of psychology I'm going to give. It's not academic. It's not airy-fairy. It's not abstract. It's not difficult to grasp. The way I'm going to define psychology is the study of why you are as you are. It's that simple. Why you are as you are. And when I'm talking about the way you are, what I mean are things like your habits, your goals, your relationships, your life story, your unconscious aspects, your communication style, your likes and dislikes, your defenses, your aversions, your strengths and weaknesses, your needs, your worldview, and all the rest of it. Your entire inner world. Why is that the way it is? I want you to notice the simple power of this definition, because it's very deceptive. It might sound simplistic, like something you would read in a primary school textbook. But think about it like this. You exist as you are. You are the person as you are. There are 7 or 8 billion people on this planet, apparently. And you are you. You are the way you are. Your inner world is the way it is. You have your habits. You have your communication style, your likes and dislikes, your strengths, your weaknesses, your needs, your worldview, and so on. These things are all very specific to you. Now, of course, they're probably duplicated in some form across the world. You exist as the way you do. And it's not just about how many people there are on this planet and realizing that you are a specific configuration of of all those different characteristics, which you may not find in the exact same way in another person. Let's take it deeper. Imagine the fact that you could quite easily not exist. Why should anything exist at all? Why should you be alive? Why should you be able to perceive? Why should you be alive as a human? I don't mean you, I just mean the human condition. Why should the human condition exist at all? Now, that's something to deeply contemplate. I'm not going to give you an answer, and I'm not saying there necessarily is a clear answer, but the human condition might not exist at all, and if that was the case, you wouldn't exist. And so you simply couldn't exist as you are. You wouldn't exist at all, let alone as you are. But here we are, and we all exist in the exact way that we are right at this very moment. Why is that? Why do we see the world as we do? Why do our relationships go the way they do? Why do we have the fears that we do? Why do we have the inner struggles that we do? Why are we good at what we're good at? Why are we strong in the areas we're strong at in life? Why do we have recurring patterns in our life, for better and for worse? You know, this stuff is all very specific, and it might not even exist at all. I really want you to grasp the depth of what I'm saying here. Imagine not existing versus existing as you are. Those two things are like complete opposites of each other, and yet here we are, and you're alive, and you are the way you are. If you don't get the depth of this statement, I just really sit and like realize that you are the way you are. Your psychology is as it is, and you may not exist at all. And contemplate the simple power of this definition. It's a very powerful definition. It might sound very frivolous again, but why are you the way you are? Like, really, why? You know, why do you have the religious views you do? Why do you have the political views you do? Why do you speak to people in a certain way? Why is this? And it's not a random thing. I'm not saying it's fully deterministic and predetermined either, but why is it this way? Really, why? That is what psychology is trying to ask. And again, this is an academic definition. And then, you know, a university professor might turn their nose up at me. But this is an extremely practical definition. And it's both very broad and it's very deep, as I've tried to show you there. So there are many branches of psychology, even though we're not doing an academic thing here. It's interesting to realize that there are many branches of psychology and to ask, why are there so many branches? And there's quite a simple explanation for that. Some of the branches are social psychology, developmental psychology, cognitive psychology, analytical psychology, evolutionary psychology, depth psychology, abnormal psychology, behavioral psychology, I do apologize, spiritual psychology. What is going on here? I mean, that's just a short sample. You could do a bit of research and find just how many main branches of psychology there are. There's probably 20, 30, 40, 50. And once you get into sub-branches, you're really, you know, it's kind of endless. What is going on here? Well, if we remember that psychology is a study of why we are the way we are, what you can realize is that what these different schools of psychology are doing, and these different, really, they're different practices of psychology because they're not just academic schools, but in therapeutic situations, all these different branches are used and they're often intermingled. What they're all trying to do is to answer this question of why we are the way we are from different angles. They're like different answers to the same question. For example, right, social psychology would ask, how does our social world influence who we are? And I don't just mean your own personal social circle, although that's obviously a factor, but It's more the social nature of the human being in general, regardless of who your social circle is. How does that influence who we are? And obviously, you could be just a social, you know, people spend their entire career studying social psychology. Developmental psychology would ask something like, how do the stages of human development influence who we are? You know, there are many theories that lay out the stages of human development in many different areas of human psychology. So how do those influence who we are? Can we predict who a person is at a certain point in their life based on developmental psychology? And the answer is yes, you can do a very good job. And not just age-related development, but just mind development, which isn't strictly age-bound. But that's another story. If you want to learn more about that, go and see my developmental psychology series. You'll find it on the homepage of my website. Analytical psychology would ask something like, how do our unconscious patterns influence who we are? Because much of what goes on in our mind, much of what composes who we are, is not something that we are consciously aware of. That doesn't mean it's hidden from us, strictly speaking. It means it's sort of semi-hidden from us. And how does that influence us? And clearly, and that's just three different schools, social developmental and analytical psychology. Each of the other schools would ask something different, a slightly different framing. And clearly they're all important. So what the different branches of psychology are, they're just asking, how are you the way you are? Why are you the way you are? And they have different ways of answering that question. And they're all valid in their own way. They're all valid within their own context. Interestingly, these different schools often disagree with one another. And often they're really fighting with one another. This is, again, we're not doing academic psychology, but if you look at academic psychology over the decades, there's been a lot of conflict. And there's been a lot of times where a certain group of psychologists have tried to like corner or monopolize the field. And they've basically tried to say, this is the only valid way of looking at the human being. Like the behaviorists in the 1960s, 70s or 80s, I can't remember exactly when it was, but it was around that time, 50 years ago roughly. They were basically saying we could explain human behavior basically just by conditioning and through reinforcement of behavior. That's what it all ultimately boiled down to, according to them. Freud, on the other hand, believed it was all about our early development. It was all about the different stages of biological development, psychological development that we go through, how those interact, and how that ultimately makes us who we are. You see, they're both just saying this is why we are the way we are. I mean, they're doing it in a very convoluted way, but that's essentially what they're doing. And then they're offering, you know, different therapies and so on based on that. But that's really what they're doing. And also notice that you as a person can come to be very sort of strict and dogmatic about why you are the way you are based on a certain psychological school, you know. You might say, oh, well, we're programmed to be the way we are. Well, you're basically making a statement about why you are the way you are psychologically. You're basically making a statement about human psychology. Or you might say, well, Freud said this and Freud said that. And, well, you're making a statement about why you are the way you are. For what it's worth, and I'm not going to go more in depth into these schools on their own. We're going to look at different examples because I think it's important to understand how the different schools relate to down-to-earth, everyday human problems, which they absolutely 100% do. I just want to say that I use them all in my understanding of human behaviour. and I use them all when I'm working with people one-to-one, but I'm not bound to any of them. So I'm not going to say, oh, I'm a behaviorist, or I'm a Freudian, or I'm a CBT guy. I mean, I'm not actually a qualified psychologist, I'm a coach, but I'm not bound to any one of them. And I feel like I see the value in all of them, and I see the limitations. Just a quick note, you can actually group all of these different schools of psychology into individual and collective and subjective and objective factors to get a hand on them. So there's four different categories, and these come from the four quadrants by Ken Wilber. You can see the four quadrants episode in my Ken Wilber series on the homepage of my site. If you're interested in that, I go into a lot of depth into the four quadrants, but basically we've got individual subjective, individual objective, collective subjective, collective objective. And you don't have to call it these, but it's just a good way of sort of categorizing and see how the different schools of psychology are trying to get at this question of why we are the way we are. Individual subjective schools are the developmental school, the cognitive school, analytical and spiritual schools of psychology. Individual objective, because you're looking at the body and you're looking at behavior from an external point of view. The behavioral school, biological psychology, schools of psychology that talk a lot about genetics, for example. The collective subjective psychological schools look at the cultural and social factors behind why we are the way we are. And collective objective schools look at things like politics, economics, law, technology, and so on. So you can see that we can look at things on an individual and a collective level, and there's no automatic favouring of one over the other. That's my basic view. And again, you can go and listen to the Four Quadrants episode if you want to really get a handle on that, because it's quite an involved topic. But what I'd like to do now, let's now shift gears and say, what are some interesting questions we can ask? What are some interesting psychological questions we can ask? Because this is really where psychology stops being something abstract. It starts being something very practical. Because remember, it's the study of why you are the way you are. And this is very down-to-earth question. This is a very everyday applied question. For example, you might ask, why do I speak to my spouse as I do? Why do I excel at my hobbies and interests? Why do I hold my political views, the particular political views that I have? Why do I have a phone addiction? That's a very common question nowadays. And notice, when we ask these different questions, and these are just a very short, very small sample, what we're basically doing is we're trying to answer the question of, why am I the way I am in different areas of life? You know, why do I speak to my spouse the way I do? We're just asking, why am I the way I am when I speak to my spouse? So that's why I said that the definition of psychology that I gave is very broad, but it's also very deep. And listen, for each of these questions, these interesting questions that we ask about ourselves, there are many different answers we can give. And the answers we give really depends on our views of human psychology and why is it we end up the way we are. How is it that these patterns are created in our lives? And then how we choose to address it, you know, what will we do about it, also depends on what our views are. So you see, the impact is just, even the way the basic answers we give to these questions frame our entire view and our entire approach to dealing with it if we choose to do so. Let's look at a very basic example, but one that just shows the sort of the different views we can have and how that influences us, and also the kind of the complexity of this question. Even though it seems simple, this question is, why do I excel at my hobbies and interests? Ask that to yourself right now. If you've got a particular hobby you enjoy, an interest, and you put a lot of time into it and people notice that you're above average or even outstanding in that area, or even your career, you know, if you've got a successful career, or just any area in your life where you stand out, ask yourself, why do I excel at this? And just as I'm talking here, try and find your own answer to that question. But continue to listen, because there are many ways to answer this question. We're going to look at a small selection just so you see the kind of the different ways that we can look at this. Now, if you're from my parents' and grandparents' generations, I was born in the 90s, my parents were born in the 60s, my grandparents were born in the 1940s, the very early 1940s, just before the Second World War started. Their answers are very telling as to how they view the human being and why we are the way we are. Their explanation for why people excel at things is basically comes down to genetics, that it runs in the family, that it's inherited, and that it's basically just like random selection. So for example, if you're a good musician and you ask someone from my parents or my grandparents' generation, hey, why am I a good musician? They'll say, oh, it's just in your genes. And you say, well, okay, I understand that if my mum and dad are musicians, that maybe there's a genetic factor there. But if my mum and dad aren't musicians, how on earth can I be good? And they might say, well, oh, well, your great-granddad played the violin a little bit. So there it is in the family. And it's going to be hard for them to kind of see another point of view. I mean, listen, I'm just talking about my own experience in general of how my parents and grandparents' generations see something like this. But that might not be the case for you. But in any case, I'm sure you know people that view it like this. Another person might say that it's to do with your life history. So it's a more of a behavioral explanation. So they would say something like, well, you are very good in this area because you've slowly built the habits. You've been passionate about your hobbies for many years. You're an ambitious person. You're autonomous. You know, you don't need someone to kick you up in the backside to get you to practice your instrument or whatever. Or to, do some painting on the side. You just do it yourself. You deeply grasp how learning works, and so you know what to do, and you know what needs to go into something for you to get really good at it. Someone could, you know, people quite easily hold that point of view. That's a very specific way of seeing why you are very good in this area, why you are the way you are in this area. Do you hold that point of view? You could also look at the zeitgeist. You know, you could say, well, why do I excel at my hobbies and interests? And you could say, well, it's because we live in an individualist era in which it's advantageous to excel at different pursuits because it makes you stand out. You know, it's good to have like other interests. It's good for your CV because it shows that you're autonomous, that you take the initiative, that you overcome your fear, that you're willing to grow, that you've, you know, there's more to your life than just your career, which might not always be an advantage in certain careers, but in others it certainly is. You might say, well, it's also because it's easier to learn than ever before, because there's the internet and there's so many websites. Like if you want to learn anything, you can pretty much go from zero to hero just by watching free YouTube videos. There's so many resources. There's, you know, if you want a book delivered to your house, you can get one in a few days quite easily. You know, and you can be living anywhere in the world, whereas, you know, 100 years ago, if you wanted to learn some weird instrument, you'd be struggling to learn it. You'd have to travel. You might have to even move to a different village or city just to learn an instrument, because there was no other way to do it back in the day. we have more free time nowadays because there's not, you know, we've got modern appliances and we're not working out in the fields all day. And, you know, we've just got a lot of modern comforts and give us more free time. You see, that's another totally legitimate set of explanations for why we're good at something. And you might even give like a more analytical explanation. You know, you could say, well, you had some early experiences in that area. You know, maybe you wanted to become an artist because you went to some art exhibition when you were younger and something, even though you're young, you didn't really understand the art very well. Maybe there was some painting that really caught your eye and that became lodged in your mind for all these years, and it sort of driven you in the background for many years to get good at this thing. That's a more analytical and more sort of looking at the subconscious. You see that, and listen, that's just a very short, we've looked at genetics, we've looked at behavior, we've looked at the zeitgeist, which are more cultural, social explanation. We've looked at the unconscious. Those are just four areas. We could look at so many other areas that would explain why you excel at your hobbies and interests, right? And it's interesting to notice that none of these answers are complete on their own. You know, some of them I don't agree with, but even the ones I do agree with aren't a full explanation. You know, they have their own flaws, and you can't explain the whole thing by them just by looking at that one point of view, for example. Because who we are is really a complex mosaic that depends on individual and collective forces. And there's so many of those forces that it's really tricky to narrow it down. And that's not a flaw. That's just the nature of why we are the way we are. It's a complex, it's a very complex set of forces guiding why we become the way we are. Let's talk about the different sort of therapy modalities under this definition of looking at psychology as the study of why you are the way you are. So looking at something like psychiatry, for example, you might say, well, what does psychiatry have to do with this? Because psychiatry is very psychological. There's a lot of psychology that's used in psychiatric treatment. What's that got to do with this? Well, listen, you could say that psychiatry is about changing enduring and highly damaging aspects of who we are often through chemical interventions, through quite, complicated interventions, through quite invasive interventions sometimes. Whereas something like psychotherapy is changing more what I would call problematic aspects of who we are in still critical areas of our lives, but not like, it's not like life and death. Whereas if you're getting psychiatric treatment, often it's quite a severe thing. It's really affecting your functioning, your basic functioning. And something like coaching, which is really what I do, is optimizing who we are in important but not critical aspects of our lives. Now listen, these definitions are just, you know, it's just to try and get a handle on the subject, because listen, as a coach, for example, I can work with people if they have a critical condition. Let's say they're depressed. I can work with them and I can give them tools, but I cannot, strictly speaking, I cannot do psychotherapy on you, and I definitely cannot diagnose or treat the condition directly. Now, obviously, that's a grey area, but these things aren't set in stone. There's not absolute rigid boundaries between them. Think of coaching as, on one end of the spectrum, as like soft intervention with greater flexibility and focused on more conscious and willed change, whereas psychiatry is hard intervention with less flexibility and focused on sort of external intervention. I'm just mentioning this because it helps you put this definition that I've given you of the study of why you are the way you are, this question of why you are the way you are, and how like a psychiatrist might see it, and how a psychologist might see it, and how a coach might see it, and how they might go about helping you, and when you might seek their help for something, for different issues that you're having in your life. And it's interesting because let's take a specific problem like mediocrity, like a lack of success in your life. You might actually treat these in different ways. Like you might need coaching for that. You might need psychotherapy for that. You might need even psychiatric treatment for that. You know, if it's to do with your habits, like if you just got really bad habits in your life, then you might go and see a coach. If you've got passion problems, if you're doing things but you're not really passionate for them, then a coach can certainly help you with that. If you're looking at beliefs and sort of limiting ideas you have about yourself, then in all these situations, soft intervention may be enough for you, and a coach is what you're looking for. If you're, on the other hand, if you're looking at deep trauma that really affects your functioning, and or you're looking at really messed up behavioral patterns that are not common, then perhaps psychiatric intervention is required. One of the main critiques I actually have of things like psychiatry and medicine-based approaches to psychological treatment is that what they'll often do is they will, without realizing it, I think, a lot of the time, is as soon as you give someone medicine, you kind of implicitly upgrade the severity of their personal difficulties to a critical level, as though the source was some kind of like uncontrollable genetic or neurological condition. Like, let's say I go to the doctors for depression, and their first port of call, which it often is to give you a prescription for an antidepressant. Well, you're going to walk out of there feeling like a bit of a hospital case, if you allow me to speak colloquially about a serious condition. You're going to walk out of there thinking there's something like deeply messed up about you. You know, you might think that, oh, it's my brain, like I've got fully messed up, like permanent brain damage, or I've got like something really deeply messed up about my psyche, or I've got like some sort of genetic condition that's unchangeable and untreatable. That might not be the case though. It might not be the case. You might be just, someone in your family might have died and you're depressed because it's like this huge shock in your life, and it's like your whole life has changed and you don't know what to do with yourself. There's nothing necessarily profoundly wrong with you. It's just you're going through a tough human experience. Or you've broken up with someone. There's nothing deeply wrong with you about if you get depressed about breaking up with someone. Now, I'm not saying that's not something you can work on. I'm not saying that has to be your default response. But, I mean, listen, you're getting, if you're hurt, deeply hurt about breaking up with someone, that's normal. That's not a pathological thing. And if they give you medicine, then you're going to walk out thinking, oh, maybe this is like untreatable in some way. Or it's, I mean, maybe not, because they're giving you medicine, but you might think, you know, there's something deeply wrong with my psychology, with the way I am. But it might not be. It might be a behavior thing. It might be a habit thing. It might be a mindset thing. It might just be that you're passing through a normal human experience. And often I think that is the case. You know, when we diagnose people, and I'm going to talk about this later this month, we diagnose people with all sorts of things nowadays very, very readily, way too readily in my opinion. And in my opinion, a lot of it is just behavior and mindset and interest and, there's other factors, but not deep, irreversible problems. When you give someone medicine, you're pathologizing them. And often this is done not for the patient's benefit. It's done because of the constraints of the medical system for financial reasons, for expediency, for the fact that doctors are, you know, overworked through budget problems and these kind of things, which, you know, I might sound like an idealist, and maybe I am, but it's not, ultimately, that is not what we want to be doing when we're treating people. But anyways, let's move on from that and let's, again, change gears, because I want to talk about the core of psychology, the real kicker that changes how you will understand psychology forever. Remember the definition of psychology being the study of why we are the way we are. I know I've done that to death, but it's simple but very powerful, this definition. I'm going to make a claim here that, as I've said, will alter how you see psychology and how you see yourself forever. I'm going to claim that all of our traits, all of the ways we are, and there are many of those ways, have deep and fundamental reasons, and that through careful introspection, self-observation, and inner work, we can discover them and change them if need be. So that's quite a dramatic claim that I'm making. And I think it's interesting to comment that from a personal point of view, when I say deep fundamental reasons, I'm not really talking about genetics. I don't believe in genetics all that much. I really don't. I don't believe in it. When we're talking about human psychology, I do not believe in genetics very much. And we're going to talk about this a lot more this month. What I'm saying is that there are fundamental reasons that you are the way you are. And these are things that you can actually discover and change yourself. They're not genetically bound or determined. They're not because you are wired a certain way, as we like to say informally, and that is the way you're going to be forever. And it's not that you need to get medicine and you need to do this and that. It's actually a lot of it, and a great majority of it, is things that are actually in your direct control that you can see, learn to see for yourself, that you can learn to discover and understand why they came to be that way. And there are things you can change through conscious work. And the main insight I'm using here to ground what I'm saying is that your psychology is not external to you. In other words, the way you are is not external to you. Now, that might sound obvious, but whenever we give sort of, when we give people medicine, and when we talk about the brain, and we talk about our genetics, and we talk about people being wired a certain way, we're basically externalizing the problem. Now, obviously, your brain isn't external to you. Your genetics are not external to you. But it's the way we talk about it. It's the way we talk about it in this, in a very sort of conceptual, abstract, predetermined way, that I think is fundamentally disempowering for people, and it's not accurate. Because the way you are is not invisible. It's not invisible. The way you are is, by definition, visible, because we're saying it's the way you are. Obviously, that is a visible thing. The way you speak to people is very visible. Your habits are very visible. I'm just looking back to see the different things we've talked about. Your aversions are visible. Your defenses are visible. Your weaknesses, your strengths, your needs, your worldview, your life story, all of this is very visible. And it's not just visible to other people, which is helpful because that can be a good way to get feedback and a good way to understand why you are the way you are, but it's visible to you from the inside. Now, that's quite a big claim I'm making, but also I'm really sort of putting a lot of faith in introspection and in self-awareness, because I think this is just so powerful and so fundamental, and that these factors can be brought into conscious awareness. That doesn't mean that there aren't factors that are beyond our conscious awareness. Now, I'm not saying that, for example, if you look at sort of the collective aspects of why we are the way we are, things like the culture and the social milieu and the political situation, the economic situation, the technological situation, I'm not saying that you're going to know everything about the way you are. But what I'm saying is that the actual way that you are, not the reasons behind it, the way you actually are, is visible to you and it's visible to other people. It obviously depends on how aware and tuned in they are and how aware and tuned in you are. But fundamentally, they are available to introspection, and they are available to you becoming aware of them. Okay? And also that remarkable change is possible to create from within for this very reason, because if your psychology was invisible to you, if the way you are was invisible to you, it wouldn't be possible to change it, would it? Because to change something, you have to know what you're changing. You have to see where you are now, see where you want to get to, and, you know, do something to make that happen. But that's not the case. The way we are is visible, therefore change is possible, because we can see where we are, we can figure out where we want to be, and we can take action to make that happen. And final powerful insight before we wrap up this foundational episode is that who we are is very strongly determined by what has been necessary throughout our life and what has been necessary given the environment that we are in. And because of this, who we are is ultimately generated through repeated choice and reinforcement, sort of optimizing for the conditions we find. For example, the way you speak to people is in a very important way. It's obviously down to individual factors, but in very important ways, it is down to repetition, it's down to reinforcement, it's down to the fact that at some point in your life, you adopted this way of speaking to people because it served you in some way, or because you saw it in other people and you saw that it worked for them in certain situations. Now, I'm not glorifying, for example, if you speak to people horribly, I'm not glorifying that. And I'm not going to sort of falsely pretend that we can tolerate things like that and whitewash things. But I'm not demonizing you either. I mean, listen, I find it hard to not do that because some people are quite frankly horrible. But, you know, fundamentally, it's generated through repetition, reinforcement, and because at some point that seemed like the best way to go about speaking to people. You have to like think about this. When you're born, when you first come into life, you have no idea. You don't even know how to speak. You don't know what language is. You don't even know what other people are. When you're born, you do not have a sense of other. I've spoken about how self and other is a developmental achievement. Go back to January, I believe, for that one. You do not, like, you cannot communicate with other people for so many reasons. So your whole way of speaking to people is a construction. And I don't mean that in a dismissive way. I mean that it had to be built. It's not just given to you, it had to be built. How was it built? It was built in a large way, and not reducing it to this, because again, there's so many factors involved, but I'm saying in a very large way, it's just repetition, it's just reinforcement, and it was because this seemed like a good idea to you at the time. Okay? And this is powerful, because what we realize is that we are being ourselves all the time. And this is an active thing. I'm not saying it's always something that we're really aware of and that we're conscious of, and that we're deliberately making choices in every single moment as to who we're going to be, because frankly that would be exhausting, and no human being on the planet is conscious enough to do that, I think. But it is still an active process, because every time we do something, every time we speak, every time we express a need of ours, every time we act out a need of ours, every time we do something, we are reinforcing who we are, right? And because that is ultimately something we can become aware of, it's something that is ultimately visible to us, then it's possible to become remarkably aware of how you are reinforcing who you are, by how you're actively being who you are. And this is not through reading books. It's not through attaching yourself to a single psychological school and saying, well, Freud was the best and Carl Jung said this and that. No, it's through self-awareness, right? It's through deep self-awareness of how you operate, how you are the way you are. And through deeply questioning why you are the way you are. Why? You could not exist as a human. Life could not exist. You may never have been born. But here you are, and you are the way you are. Why? Why are you that way? That is the question that we're answering this month. And that is the question we have set up in today's episode. So, folks, just want to remind you that this is the first episode in my What is Psychology, or my psychology series, which is going to last till the end of June. Really hope you stick around. We're going to have new long form episodes every Wednesday on this series from now till the end of June, with snippets on Thursday, Sunday and Tuesday, including tomorrow and Sunday coming, Tuesday coming, all the way through to next week's episode, which is going to be another fascinating look at a more specific aspect of human psychology. Those will all be at 9 p.m. Central European Time, 8 p.m. UK time, 3 p.m. Eastern. Make sure to subscribe on Apple or Spotify. And a quick mention that you can stay up to date with my latest episodes and projects via my newsletter. There's a link in the description to that. And you can find my books there as well. Stick around, folks. I'll be back very soon with the next one. Take care. See you soon.